This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This episode will focus on leading innovation. In today's healthcare, the lines that distinguish patient from consumer and hospital from business have become somewhat blurred. Provisions of care are evolving in parallel with today's business models. The terms value, transparency, quality, cost, and collaboration are used on the hospital floors and providers' offices in the same manner as the production line or the boardroom. The idea of innovation is no different in that regard. Otherwise defined as a new idea, device, or method, in healthcare, innovation is also the application of better solutions that meet new requirements or existing needs in the market. The Philips Corporation, for example, in its mission to remove the limits of care, advertises that health knows no bounds, and neither should healthcare. There's always a way to make life better. In a 2017 Caring for the Ages article entitled, New Society Workgroup Provides Springboard for Innovation, leaders in AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine, charged that the Society aimed to champion the cultivation of innovative solutions to the complex problems faced by clinicians in post-acute and long-term care. An innovations workgroup was established and worked with the Society board and members to forge an innovation platform serving as a repository for information, focus of awareness, and foundation of collaboration with academicians and entrepreneurs. This year, at the annual Society meeting, the focus on innovation was led by a Shark Tank competition. The winners were Patient Pattern, a risk assessment software platform, and CareBand, a wearable device designed to monitor monitoring. To help us understand the successes of these companies, we need to look at the innovators behind them. With us now to share their stories of innovation are Dr. Stephen Boslovich, a geriatrician and post-acute and long-term care medical director in Western New York, and co-founder and CEO of Patient Pattern, and Adam Sobel, CEO and founder of CareBand. Gentlemen, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne.
Dr. Boslovich, let's start with you. You have said that your vision of Patient Pattern grew out of need. You took the concept of frailty, a concept which we've discussed on this podcast in the past, but which for over the past 20 years has been defined, redefined, and still actively researched. And you used it as a foundation for a product which is now available in over 3,000 facilities across the country. Lead us through your innovative process. We are all at the bedside with frail patients. How did you, a physician in the trenches, one of us Joe AMDAs, proceed on to this significant next level from idea to company?
Well, Wayne, it hasn't been an easy road, and I think we're still learning along the way. The truth is that as a geriatric fellow, I've realized that we as geriatricians and post-acute care physicians and clinicians overall are spending and almost wasting a lot of our energy and time trying to assess our patients in a meaningful way. And often we are doing things that could be done for us by lower level clinicians or available to us in existing data within our healthcare system. Unfortunately, we often do not have access to this information. And as a geriatrician becoming a medical director without any formal training to be a medical director, I was tasked with turning several underperforming facilities around. In order for me to do that successfully, I actually had to innovate. I had to find sources of data and try to make sense of them. Frailty, as we know, while you're absolutely correct, there are many different definitions of frailty. Most geriatricians and experienced clinicians in this field can sense frailty and know frailty when they see it. But the challenge is, can we identify different magnitudes of frailty when we're not necessarily in the facility, so that we can surveillance our patients, keep a closer hand on our pulse of how our patients are performing, so that we can intervene where appropriate without us having to sit there and collect data on a regular basis, because we simply don't have the time. We need something to fit within our existing workflow, something that doesn't distract us from our already overwhelming schedules, but then helps us manage our patients. And so to innovate, it was really a necessity for me to be successful in not only my day job, but we essentially had to create Patient Pattern with a team of geriatric experts, technologists, health economists who understood where the policy changes were going and what was required to be successful today. What's happening is the nursing home environment has drastically changed already in the last 3 to 5 years. It's going to continuously change in the next 18 months. It's going to be turned on its head. Facilities a few years ago often did not really engage the clinicians in a meaningful way. Everybody seemed to operate in silos. Mm-hmm. Today and tomorrow, they're going to need to essentially work together to remain successful in the coming tide of policy, regulatory, and reimbursement changes.
How does this program, how does this platform help with this working together phenomenon? How does it work?
So what we've done is essentially we've come up with two different technologies. The first technology is to operationalize existing data, particularly the MDS data that's already available and standardized throughout the country.
Right.
But that data often bypasses clinicians. That data simply goes to CMS for quality and reimbursement purposes. It does not get access by the clinicians, and there's a wealth of information in there. Though we know it's imperfect, it's the best thing available, and it's not going anywhere. The MDS is here to stay, whether we like it or not. So let's make it work for us. And so we've essentially been able to automate a validated frailty assessment that's mathematically predictive for patients at risk for decline and poor outcomes. And so we are then able to essentially automate this information and make it presentable in a very palatable way to clinicians who are providing care at the bedside. And essentially, it offers them a back pocket tool to know who to see, who's had a change in condition at a very high level, as well as granular changes. For example, if they've had a trigger for poor quality metric, that they can evaluate if they were not already aware of it, for example. On the flip side, the other technology that we've had to create is an assessment tool that could be done at the point of care. We've taken what normally essentially takes about 2 hours to perform from a comprehensive geriatric perspective, and we've boiled it down to about a 5-minute assessment that could be done by a clinician at the bedside to assess their patient for the degree of frailty, which can then be mapped and trended over time, which gives them much more perspective of how to approach that patient from either an aggressive care approach, from a palliative care approach, and how to communicate that information to the patient and family to manage patient and family expectations, which is the most important thing in helping to reduce unnecessary utilization resources, avoid poor patient experiences, and minimize risk of rehospitalization.
Fascinating. So you took things that we see in front of us every day and you turned them into a meaningful approach to provide better quality care.
I like to think of it as making data actionable and essentially unlocking the data that's already available in the healthcare arena.
Mr. Sobel, you have come from a somewhat different direction. CareBand is advertised as an entity that's well supported by expert engineers, medical directors with years of clinical knowledge, and a team of experienced entrepreneurs. You took what appeared to be more of an off-the-shelf technology and turned it into a way to improve the care of elders with dementia. An idea that makes many of us, it made me, hit our heads and say, of course. Lead us through your process of innovation. Everyone today seems to have a wearable device. How did you get this to the next level and a company?
So I have to say first, I'm not a doctor. So I might be the only one on the show that's not a doctor, but I come from a family of doctors. So everybody in my family is a doctor except for me. I'm kind of this weird technology guy out of the mix. So growing up, I used to go to the nursing home with my dad, who's a geriatrician and is a part of AMDA. And I would look around and see that there's no technology anywhere. So, you know, while he's going and doing rounds, I would talk to the nurses and sit at the nursing station and see that there's, you know, ancient computers and lights going off everywhere. But beyond that, there's not much technology. So about 4 years ago, I came up with this idea of CareVant. Apple had just created this iBeacon technology, and I thought it had a ton of potential to change the way devices communicated with each other and really revolutionize the world. At the time, this was before the Fitbit revolution and before wearables were really a commonplace thing. And when we started, wearables really didn't exist. We're lucky now that the acceptance rate of wearables is where it is because we fit in pretty well. But anyway, I was talking to my dad about this technology, and he said, you know, if you could help seniors living with dementia who wander and get lost, you could help a lot of people. At the time, I didn't really have an idea of this dementia wandering thing, so I went out and asked as many people as I could about this dementia wandering. And everyone that I talked to could relate to it, either taking their mom out to lunch and them going to the bathroom and coming back and their mom not being there, or waking up in the middle of the night and someone's spouse not being there next to them. Over and over again, this story came out. So I looked out into the market and all the technology was old. It was big, beige, and ugly, as I like to say. Very institutional. And it just really didn't fit the purpose. It was either GPS technology or RFID technology and very limited. So I started thinking and trying to figure out how I could build some kind of solution. And as you know, the nursing home is a very hard place to build technology because there's a lot of constraints. Similar to working in there, it's difficult. On the technology side, we had to build something that didn't use Wi-Fi and that could work off of minimal cellular or no cellular. A lot of these facilities still don't have reliable Wi-Fi, or people living at home don't have reliable Wi-Fi, and you couldn't pay a lot of money for this. So we started working on it. It came out of a lot of different iterations, and we were finally able to build the device that we have today, which does real-time indoor and outdoor location tracking without the use of Wi-Fi and cellular technology. So although it's kind of off-the-shelf-ish, it's actually using a new technology that enables us to do what we're able to do today.
So much has happened in the past 4 years. But in the presence of alarms and other means that facilities have for trying to pay attention to wandering, ankle guards, etc., how were you able to take this concept and actually move it forward beyond what everyone else thought of as the best practice for the time?
It's a good question. I think today it's all about timing. You think about startups, and you know, sometimes startups get to the market and they're like way beyond their time, and they don't really fit. They don't really find their market product fit. And then there's others that are late to the game and they can't find kind of their fit either. So I think we kind of hit it. We were lucky in a lot of perspectives. So, I mean, one way is on the wearable side. Wearables are now, you know, the acceptance rate is there and people are looking to buy smart wearables and wear them and such. The other thing on the nursing home side is there's the movement towards a restraint-free environment and a noise-free environment. So taking all these alarms out. And it puts all of these constraints again back on the facility. So how do you manage these people without your commonplace technologies and tools that you've been using for the last, you know, 30 years? So I think all of this together creates a great opportunity for us to step in and say, look what we're working on and how can this help you, help you and your facility in the best way possible. I think, you know, it's just an exciting opportunity of where we are today and where technology is.
So just briefly, a patient with dementia who's a known wanderer has this wearable technology and starts to wander. What happens?
So initially, so someone will be wearing the wristband, and you can see basically on a map of where everybody is and their picture of where they are on the map, of what room they're in and what floor they're on. So that's the first peace of mind level. The second is once they get to a certain threshold or they go outside of a wing or a door, you'll get an immediate notification either to your pager or your mobile phone of exactly that this person has left this door or is even near this door. And then the third step beyond that is you'll see on a map, on a GPS map of where the person is as they're walking outside. So you have peace of mind and kind of accountability at all these different levels. And there's no excuse for all of the kind of reports that we see today of somebody hearing a door alarm go off, seeing nobody around and turning the alarm off. Now you can actually see where the person is and get them back or redirect them back into safety before they cross the busy street that's right outside.
There is no worse feeling for those of us who have been in the field to learn that despite best intentions, someone has eloped or someone isn't where they're supposed to be. And the peace of mind that this brings is just amazing.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine, the only foundation dedicated to advancing the field and practice of post-acute and long-term care medicine. Our foundation is totally unique in focusing on issues of competence, quality, and the value we bring to patients in this setting. Please support the foundation at paltcfoundation.org.
We're talking with Adam Sobel and Dr. Steven Baslovich about innovation. Dr. Baslovich, in a 2017 In Focus article about you and patient pattern, you are described as a doctor, a startup CEO, and a dad. Compared to 5 or 10 years ago, the acuity of patients that we see in the post-acute and long-term care setting has increased dramatically, such that to some, the thought of multitasking and moving away from the patient care focus seems daunting at the least. Our colleagues have ideas all the time. How can they be empowered to understand the balance and commitment that is needed to carry an idea through as you have? Is the innovation pathway more for the younger physician just starting out, or can the mid or later career physician be inspired to innovate and proceed successfully as you have as well?
Well, Wayne, that's a great question. I don't think there's a single roadmap for anybody that's ever innovated in any stage of their life. What I like to think of it as, how can you ask yourself how often you fail? And when I say that, I mean, how often do you fail at trying something new and it doesn't work? And if the answer is never, that's a problem. If the answer is once every 10 years, that's a problem. We as physicians have to continuously innovate new treatment strategies, new pathways, new attempts, and we have to be able and willing to fail. If you are comfortable in accepting the fact that you will fail and want to fail often, you will eventually stumble into an innovation that is meaningful. You know, in my particular stage of my career and life, I know this is something that is extremely helpful, not just to me, but to the practice as a whole, to the field of geriatrics, to the field of post-acute and long-term care. If I don't do this and try to be successful, somebody else with perhaps different intentions and not as much training and, you know, experience may do so with perhaps a less optimal approach. And I think it's my duty to do the best thing I can for my patients and for society. So to continue to innovate, irrespective of your age, you know, stage in career or your family situation, I think is vital to success.
You know, during the the 2018 society meeting, there was a lot of discussion about innovation and this discussion about failure. And I couldn't help but think, as physicians, we are trained to do anything but fail. Yet, to be an innovator, as you've just said, failure is part of the process. How do we, as physicians who have wonderful ideas to provide optimal care, reconcile the idea of curing, what we do all the time successfully, and failure possibly in innovation?
I think the only way we can, you know, merge those two worlds are by providing feedback mechanisms. I think if you don't measure what you do, you may not know you're failing. And if you measure what you do, and there are things that aren't not measurable, obviously, you'll be able to see where you could do better. And failure doesn't have to be a result in, you know, result in death or an irreversible outcome. It could be a failure to effectively communicate with a patient or family, to a failure to set goals and expectations, a failure to, you know, meet certain outcome goals. But the point is that it has to be something that you're cognizant of, and you need to look for a measurable way to see what you're doing right and what you're curing and what is acceptable failure rates in your own mind in order for you to continuously try to improve.
Mr. Sobel, as we conclude this episode, I want to be a bit provocative with you, especially given your earlier comment that as a child, you looked around in the post-acute and long-term care setting and saw no technology anywhere. In a 2015 perspective in the New England Journal of Medicine entitled Innovation as Discipline, Not Fad, the authors discuss how innovation has shifted from the generation of ideas to the rapid methods to deploy them, using more commercial and entrepreneurial means for testing, generating data in days or weeks rather than months or years. While their point at the end is that we need more than just the next app, are there cautions to innovation that we need to consider or be aware of? And the first question I would ask is, does innovation in healthcare really need to be a technological advance at all?
So I have a story to tell kind of that relates to this. So I'm involved in, I work out of a healthcare incubator here in Chicago called Matter. So there's about 200 healthcare startups here. And every month there's a Tales from the Trenches talk. So about 2 months ago, they brought in a CEO that came in from Silicon Valley. He had a background in technology. He had sold a few companies, and he kind of had an ego from his technology background. And he was building a company that was connected to the long-term care world and in senior care. And he was explaining this concept that he learned the hard way. But basically, you know, he was thinking that in terms of innovation and technology, when you look at long-term care, you know, there is little technology. There's not much technology in the nursing home, and they're trying to get more stuff, but it's a slow process. So his concept coming into the world was, why don't we just take this great technology from that's working in another industry and just completely apply it into long-term care? After trying that a little while, he quickly learned that it doesn't work like that. It really takes small steps and iterations until you get to a final thing. So his concept that he was sharing with us was this concept of pacing and then leading. So, you know, I thought it was really interesting to hear that from him, because in healthcare, really, you have to understand the workflow. You have to understand, you know, what do these people do on a daily basis, and, you know, what's their technical acumen and their business acumen, and really understanding them before they can get to the point that you want to get them to. So when it comes to innovation in healthcare and a whole technological advance, I really, you know, I've been trying to take this pacing then leading idea and take it to heart for Careban to figure out how can we build a small version, a proof of concept, test it, and then work on incremental steps to get to that leading aspect that we want to be at. So I think that's a really great example.
So my next question is, can innovation become a potential healthcare risk? When I think along the spectrum of models that may turn out to have a negative impact on patients or system, negative outcomes, or models that just fail, getting back to Dr. Baslovich's point, after significant human and financial investment?
So we don't know until we try. Some people would probably go the opposite way, but if you just look at pharmacy, for example, pharmaceutical drugs, how many millions or billions of dollars are put into drugs that end up failing, at some point in the process? So I think innovation is really a trial and error kind of thing. One way to kind of mitigate against the factor, this risk, is to leverage physicians as a part of your innovation cycle. So bring in domain expertise from the start instead of getting domain expertise after you build an MVP. I think I've been very fortunate, again, going back to my childhood and my family, having doctors around the table, although I didn't recognize it growing up, having them around the table was really helpful because I was able to learn as much as I could, during Thanksgiving. Instead of talking about sports, we would talk about the latest drugs that came out. But I was able to learn as I went. And building this company and working with my dad as a part of the company, he's been able to tell me, how much data, for example, is important to share with the physician, and what kind of data is important. Instead of, from my perspective as a technology guy, I want to give everyone everything. So I've learned a lot of these lessons as we built together in a co-development process instead of kind of, one by one.
We have been talking with Mr. Adam Sobel, founder and CEO of CareBand, and Dr. Stephen Baslovich, co-founder and CEO of Patient Pattern. Gentlemen, thank you for your advances in the care of our patients, for your serving as role models of innovation, and even more so, thank you for spending your time with AMDA On The Go.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
References for this episode can be found at paltc.podbean.com. For more information about the company's Patient Pattern and CareBand, please visit their websites, patientpattern.com and carebandremembers.com, as well as the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care website, paltc.org. Until next time, I'm your host, Dr. Wayne Saltzman, for this innovation project that we call AMDA On The Go.
Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast's title. Thank you for being an AMDA On The Go listener. Please help us improve our broadcast by taking a short survey at paltc.org/podcast.